We are on the air. Welcome to the Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting of December 10th. Can you please take the roll?
Just in time.
Chair Walt, Director Darcy.
Here.
Director Gonzalez.
Here.
Committee Chair Peterson.
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Are there any public comments? I'm aware of any public comments, okay. Under item four, we have approval of the minutes of the regular Finance Administration and Operations Committee meeting and executive session held on November 12th, 2014. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Additional items? No additional items that I have. We'll go to the Executive Director.
Great. Well, thank you. A couple of presentations to introduce. First on the list is Mike Kelsch, who is going to give a presentation again on the 2015 final budget. So as you know, we have a process where we approve a tentative budget in October. We have a couple of opportunities for public comment in November. And then we have a final budget that is supposed to be approved by the board in December. So Mike is going to go through. I don't think you'll see very many, if any, changes here. Not many, anyway. And but he'll go through the proposed final budget for the total for 2015.
Thank you, Christy. Good morning, everyone. And this morning's presentation will be very brief, actually, because there are very few changes as a result of the public review and public comment and some of the events that have occurred since October. We really only have one change of note. So we will present a very summary information regarding the 2015 budget. As you recall, our revenues are continuing to grow. More than 70% of the revenue is allocated to support infrastructure. Next year, we're anticipating about $1,170,000,000 in revenue. That's up from $1,022,000,000 estimated for 2014. Of course, it's mostly over 99% full revenue evasion recovery. And as you may recall, operations budget increases 3.9% to $311,000,000. We fund debt service of $362,000,000, which helps support existing debt plus $800,000,000 in new bonds that will help fund a record New Illinois investment last year. This is the highlights, fourth year, as we mentioned. Fourth year of New Illinois. Total capital program, record of $1.6 billion. The revenue does reflect the commercial vehicle toll increase that was previously approved back in 2008, scheduled to be going into effect next year. Operating costs are held at 3.9% growth. That's consistent with our long-term financial plan that was developed back in 2011 as a part of the New Illinois planning process. The change that's occurred, this is one that we seem to have every year, is that the state employees retirement system has again evaluated what they believe to be the necessary amount for employers to contribute to the state employees retirement system. Next year, they have increased that amount for the second half of our calendar year. So beginning July 1, the rate increases from about 42% to about 45%, slightly more than that. And that's going to result in us being required to shift a little bit of funding around within our budget to accommodate that retirement cost. So what we've proposed and what we're recommending is to move about $1.3 million from salaries and wages into the retirement lines. We think that can be accommodated by phasing our vacancies that we plan to fill next year slightly differently than what was proposed in October. All the department's budgets, bottom line stays the same, so it's just a movement of funds from wages and salaries to retirement. And finally, $800,000,000 in new bond issuance will provide funding for our capital program. That really summary with the one change that we're recommending. And that I'd like to address any questions.
The question on the $1.3 million on the reallocation, and that also will reflect the vacancies through all 12 months of 2015, or vacancies holding flat or not being backfilled?
There's, when we budgeted the in the tentative budget, we included full funding for many many positions that we currently have vacant.
Okay.
So for the whole 12 months. So now there are departments will have to manage that. Some of them may even only go for 9 months, so it's either 6 months.
Okay. Reflecting that, so department heads will understand the budget, but the $1.3 million allocation we need to go for.
Yes.
To meet that. Okay. And then on the $800 million new bond issue, timing on that in 2015?
I think we're looking at May for the first issue, early May. And the second issue, we're looking at October and November.
Thank you.
I just had one question. The $1.3 million is on top of something that you had already projected would be in the budget for the increase in pension? Were you holding it? How much had you projected? I'd just be interested in what the overall increase in pension cost last year over this year now will be, now that we know about the 1.3.
The projection was previously
that the percentage rate they set
would stay the same next year as it was for the second half of this year. There was still an increase because, wages and salaries went up some, but also because it was lower in the first half of last year. So I'll get you what the increase number is.
Thank you.
Do you think I can read that?
So the increase went from 42.3% to 43.9%.
And now it's going up to 45?
Now it's going up to 45.5.
Exactly.
Okay.
So
it's so from 42 to 45.
Over the course.
Okay. Right. Thank you. Okay.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Great. We're excited about not that we weren't terribly excited about the first presentation, but we are excited about the second presentation that we have today and are hoping to kind of engage in a little bit of discussion around it. As you may recall, when we went over projected spending for next year and what was on our capital spending agenda, we had a master plan development for the Central Tri-State. As all of you know, because of your time here on the board, the Tri-State is really the tollway's workhorse. It is a traffic generator, certainly a lot of high use on the Central Tri-State, and also probably the most congested part of the tollway system. So we have a rebuild of the Central Tri-State scheduled for the out years of the Move Illinois program, but we thought it was a good opportunity, since this is such a critical part of our system, to develop a master plan and really a vision around what this could and should be to accommodate the projected growth in the future, but also incorporating maybe some best practices from other parts of our road work. Obviously, the lessons that we're going to learn on I-90 with the bus service and transit component, you know, as well as smart corridor and active traffic management, you know, may very much be applied here. So I've tried very hard not to steal the entire presentation in my introduction this time.
We'll just jump to slide 7.
Yes, thank you.
The next steps.
But Rocco, who's looking forward to a short career here at the tollway.
Oh, we're jumping back to slide 1.
Is going to walk us through our vision for the master plan, and hopefully we'll get some feedback from you along the way of other things if we should be considering or taking into account. We'll be going out to issue these contracts on an upcoming bulletin to solicit the professional services necessary to produce this master plan. So, Rocco,
right. Well, thank you very much, and good morning. I wore my Christmas tie for the excitement today, but as the director said, this is the most critical project, the most critical corridor. This is really the next major project that we have in our program, and we are really looking forward to it. This is the opportunity for us to really start some of our early coordination work and conduct this master plan to do a few key things. What we will be doing is identifying what the needs are along the entire corridor, identifying some of the operational deficiencies. You can talk to your friends who drive the corridor, and they'll tell you what the operational deficiencies are. There's no doubt about that. We'll be looking at and evaluating options to address some congestion along the corridor, assessing opportunities, as the director said, to apply innovation and technology, and then also looking where we could prioritize and optimize our investments moving forward. So Central Tri-State Corridor. Thanks. Was that you with the shadow puppets behind there? This is about a 22-mile corridor stretching from 95th Street or Oak Lawn, Hickory Hills on the south side, up to actually north of Balmoral. We're going north to about the I-90, 190, 294 divergence, where all those interstates come together and break apart. So it's about a 22-mile corridor. As the director said, we've got there is funding in the Move Illinois program for the years 2020 to 2022 for construction of about $1.7 billion for mainline reconstruction. There's about $300 million for the entire tri-state corridor, $310 million for the entire corridor for bridge and ramp repair. Really, what we're doing now is kicking off the master plan for the entire corridor. The intent today is really to discuss, that's what we really want to do, is hear some feedback from you as well, discuss what generally is going to be addressed in the master plan along the corridor, and it's really how we intend to approach the work moving forward. It's very nice to actually have an opportunity to do some roll-up-the-sleeves type planning work on this corridor since it is so important to us. Our master plan is comparable to a phase one type of a project, which was, you hear a lot about IDOT or Federal Highway Administration phase one project. What we basically get out of the master plan, we take the plans, the details to about 20% of the overall project. So it's really kind of putting us in position to do the master planning work and then push it over to design and then ultimately into construction. As you'll see, we don't have all the answers yet, but we want to hear from you what your issue, what concerns, issues, or opportunities may face us as well. So first I want to review the existing corridor. So initially, back in 1958, we built three lanes in each direction from I-55 north to Balmoral, and two lanes in each direction from I-55 south to 95th Street. That was part of the initial construction of the tollway in 1958. In 1972, we widened to three lanes on the inside, from I-55 to 95th, so at that point in time, we had three lanes basically throughout the entire corridor. And then in 1992, we added the fourth lane in each direction to the outside from 95th all the way up to Balmoral. In 2001 and 2012, we also did resurfacings of the corridor, and 2020 would be the next time when we have to come out there and do some kind of major work on the corridor, which is what we're planning. So this is basically what we've done over the years on the corridor. There, when we did the widening, interesting, there was some of it wasn't just a full reconstruction widening, some of it was really resurfaced and widened, so there is still some original 1950s pavement out on this corridor. As the director said, this is the this portion of the Central Tri-State carries the most amount of traffic on the entire tollway system, ranging anywhere between 120,000 to 185,000 vehicles a day. At some points, it's about 17% commercial vehicle traffic, really near the Cermak Road Toll Plaza, so very, very high traffic volumes. Also, you know, why this is such an important corridor for us, and this goes into a lot of our thinking and planning moving forward. The tri-state in total generates about $445 million annually in revenue, which is about 45% of the overall system-wide revenue. The central tri-state alone accounts for about 42% of the tri-state revenue and about 19% of overall system-wide revenue. So very, very important corridor for us. It is also the most congested section on the entire tollway system. What we have here is, you know, these are basically, this is a planning time index map, and you can see some of the, this is the morning a.m. Peak period congestion, basically from I-55 all the way up to, we'll call it O'Hare Airport, when you see some of the levels of congestion. And actually in the afternoon, it's pretty much flipped, but a little bit worse, where the congestion actually starts a little bit north of O'Hare, about Willow Road, and goes all the way down south. This, you know, really, this map and others are very indicative of what's happened to the tollway system over time. We are no longer a bypass of the Chicago area. We're very much an integral part of the regional transportation system. You know, with this type of traffic, and then we're also very much a key part, a key cog in the overall interstate network through here. As you'll see as I move forward, some of the challenges that we face is we've got five other interstates that interface with the Central Tri-State Corridor, so very much in the heart of it all. Some of the challenges, and this is really the meat of the presentation, there's no shortage of challenges on this project. You know, first what I'll start out with is some of the land use. As I said, you know, when we originally built the system back in the 50s, what I've always heard is the intent was to really connect the Cook County Forest Preserves when the Tri-State Tollway was built. I don't know if that's true, but we certainly succeeded in connecting them, and I can assure you that because we do a lot of work with Cook County Forest Preserve from Wampum Lake to the south all the way up to the north end of the tollway system. So there's many forest preserves. But forest preserves are one aspect of land use through there. It's very much now an urban and suburban area throughout the entire corridor. I don't think anybody ever envisioned the type of growth along this corridor that we've seen today. You know, it's really that first bypass ring of the city of Chicago. So we've got a lot of industrial manufacturing, a lot of residential forest reserves all lining the corridor, which poses some challenges. And that leads into why we have some of the highest traffic volumes on the system. From our planning work that we're going to be doing, knowing that we've got high traffic volumes and high levels of congestion, some of the things that are going to be very, very important to us looking at the way to approach the project is maintenance of traffic. We always look at the impact on the customer. When we're looking at the maintenance of traffic, typically what we will do is, however many lanes are out there today, we'll leave that many open during construction. This will be the first time that we're actually reconstructing a roadway with four lanes and having to face that same challenge. So it's very limited on space and very tight corridor. We also look at the traffic and revenue impacts associated with our maintenance of traffic and construction staging. We know for sure that people will divert off Interstate 294, we'll see people going over to I-35 during construction, but what we want to do is assess how the traffic and revenue will react to any of the staging and maintenance of traffic. That's something that we do on a lot of our projects, but this one's going to be extremely important for us given the critical nature of everything we do through here. Interchanges, we've got a lot of interchanges on the corridor. As I said, you know, the development patterns certainly have changed. We've talked about it before on I-90. I-90, all the interchanges basically get you to and from the city of Chicago. With the tri-state, basically all the interchanges get you to and from O'Hare Airport, only from one direction. So from the south, we're getting you to the airport, and from the north, we're getting you to the airport. So really, we have a lot of partial interchanges. A lot of the interchanges were designed for 1950s traffic within 1950s right-of-way. So it's very constrained out there. As I noted before, we've got interfaces with five different interstates that connect with us: Interstate 55, Interstate 88, I-290 interchange. We will have a future connection with the Elgin O'Hare, the Western Bypass portion of Elgin O'Hare, which is going to interface with us, and all the way up to the north. We also connect with Interstate 90, so a lot of connecting traffic to us. There are a lot of, so we'll be looking at what kind of operational improvements can be done. We'll have to coordinate that, and we have been coordinating already with the Illinois Department of Transportation, possibly the Federal Highway Administration, looking at what their needs are, what their timing of any construction, if they have any construction out there. We also have a lot of local or system interchanges, or I should say service interchanges, along the entire corridor. Some of these interchanges are full interchanges, but there are many partial interchanges out there, too. We'll be looking at some of the operational deficiencies on those. And what we could do from a geometric standpoint, merging distances, sight lines, curvature, the tightness of ramp. There are opportunities for new and expanded interchanges. We have been working with two areas in particular
One is down here where Interstate 294, we actually used to have an interchange, I-294 to UVH. It was taken out back in the 90s. Part of the Central Tri-State work at that point in time was some land use issues with some schools, so the ramp was taken out. We're working now with the Village of Justice and the Southwest Council of Mayors to look at the opportunities to bring back the interchange at this location. Really, it's an inaccessible area right now to a lot of the industrial and manufacturing jobs in the south suburbs through here. So we've already started some of the early coordination efforts to see what can be done with that. This is following with our interchange policy, and the Village of Justice is taking the lead on that. The other interchange, new service interchange that's being evaluated, is Interstate 294 North Avenue. This is part of the Elgin O'Hare Western Access Project. The city of North Lake has been taking the lead on this project. This is a very interesting area. If anybody knows the area at all, this is really North Lake, all the industrial jobs, North Lake, Melrose Park. You've got a lot of things happening through here. The only way to get eastbound on 294 right now, this is the true story, you take Interstate 294, you loop around the I-290 range, you get to go westbound on North Avenue or Illinois 64, you turn into a street called Bertolli, you pull into somebody's driveway, you back out of the driveway, you go back to North Avenue and you turn right and go back eastbound. That's what happens out there.
Do we charge a toll on the driveway?
Yeah. Actually, I heard a lot about this. My cousins used to live on the street Bertolli. They were the third house in. So I'd go to their house all the time, and they would have lawn chairs or cones in their driveway. What's wrong with this? That's what you see it all day long. Cars come in. That's absolutely horrible access from one interstate to a major industrial area. So that's really what happens through there. I can't make that up. We don't have a toll there, and so they've since moved. So that's another opportunity area for us for newer expanded interchange access that we're looking at through there. Challenges on the system, but that is certainly an opportunity to enhance and improve access into the areas where people need to go to. Bridges? Let's see. All right. Nancy, can you advance me? My button's not working. We've got a lot of bridges out there. Maybe I hit another button. I don't know. We've got a lot of bridges along the corridor, too. I believe the actual number of bridges, we have 65 mainline bridges, which are tollway bridges over a feature. It could be over a road, over a river or something like that. We've got 21 bridges that are over the tollway, so 65 that we're over, 21 that are over us. But there are two bridges of note along the corridor, two specific challenges. One is the mile-long bridge down here at the south end, and the other one is the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad Bridge. Why these two are so critical for us, one, the mile-long bridge, it's a mile long. We'll have to look at the scope of work. This is our opportunity to get out there, figure out what we want to do, not just today, but also long-term. If we want to set the bridge to accommodate just a four-lane cross-section out there, five-lane cross-section, really kind of understanding what we do, it's our opportunity to get out there, do it once, and do it right, and walk away from it. But the staging and the maintenance of traffic with this bridge, with such a long distance of the bridge and such a complex bridge and having four lanes through there, maintenance of traffic is going to be key. So we want to minimize the disruption to our customers while we're out there. So really kind of thinking through what's the right way to scope and approach that overall project. And then the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad Bridge, it's one of the highest traveled railroad corridors crossing our system, and we realize we're going to have to replace that bridge. That's going to be a major challenge for us. It's going to take a lot of coordination with us and the Burlington Northern group, so we have to look at the staging of that. How do you make sure that trains can continue to use this line? Again, we're very much an integral part of not just the interstate network, but the freight network, as we talked about before. So Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad is going to be another major project and a major challenge for us. So this is nice that we're getting out there early enough and having these opportunities to look at this corridor. Then we also have two oases along the entire corridor. We've got the Hinsdale and O'Hare Oasis. Hinsdale and O'Hare Oasis. This is the reality that we have to deal with. It's a constrained opening on both of these, so it really kind of limits what we can do on these corridors. So that's always something for us to deal with. And then our typical utilities and other railroads and billboards. If you've driven along the corridor, you see many utilities and billboards across the entire range. So it does take a lot of coordination to
to relocate those if they are needed to be relocated. And as I've said, you know, it is a constrained right-of-way along the entire corridor. The development has grown up along the entire stretch. So we'll have to look at opportunities for either new right-of-way or building retaining walls to avoid right-of-way. So those are some of the challenges. But with challenges, every challenge brings an opportunity. The first, one of the things that we're going to be looking at is we're going to evaluate the opportunities to address congestion along the entire corridor. We know this is one of the most congested sections along the system, so it does provide us an opportunity to really look at what can be done through there. The range of alternatives that we will begin to look at is a basically reconstructing the four lanes of each direction with a wider median inside shoulder comparable to what we have out there on the I-90 corridor. Looking at what happens if we go to a five lanes of each direction, or maybe even a fifth lane in each direction with that wide inside shoulder. What we'll be evaluating are the cost of the project, the impacts of the project from the right-of-way, and utilities, billboards, and whatnot, all those other issues. We'll be looking at maintenance of traffic. So if we're out there, how do you stage your maintenance of traffic to fit in with one of these? Is there one that's preferable over another? We're looking at opportunities, not necessarily widening or doing something across an entire corridor, but looking at spot congestion. Where can we really optimize some of our investments. As the director said, we'll be looking at comparable what we've done on I-90, the active traffic management, the technology, what makes sense and for this particular corridor, and also assessing the transit market. We have been working with PACE in the past about looking at what the transit market opportunities are. Along Interstate 294, we know there's a big connection between the Harvey Intermodal, the transit intermodal, and O'Hare Airport, so there's a job surplus up at O'Hare, and there's a lot of job need down in the south suburbs, so how do you get those connections and is transit part of that solution? As I said, you know, other things we'll be doing is looking at optimizing the long-term solution for the mile-long bridge. What is that long-term solution on 294, and how do we build that bridge? Do it, like I said, do it once and do it right and stay out. Looking at these interchange improvements at multiple locations, as I said, we've already started some of our coordination, not just with IDOT, but we're also working with Cook County and Cook County's long-range plan. They're looking to provide better enhanced access into these manufacturing and industrial areas, communities along the corridor. So we'll be looking at some of those interchanges, also the one that's part of the Elgin O'Hare project. But that's going to take the coordination with IDOT, Cook County, some of the locals, as I said, has already started, and with some of the intermodal facilities. We also have an opportunity to look at freight strategies. At last month's Customer Service Strategic Planning Committee, we talked about freight and our freight strategic plan for the agency, and one of the things that definitely popped up was the congestion. One of the things that we heard about is the lack of parking. We heard about concern for congestion, especially along the Central Tri-State Corridor. It's in one of the areas that the truckers avoid because of congestion. So we'll be looking at what opportunities we could what things we can do to enhance freight along the corridor. So it could be parking, some spot congestion relief, better access into and out of intermodal facilities. We also heard some desire for better communication through ITS and dynamic message boards. And then weight limits as well. I was at a conference with Amy Lee yesterday, and I was looking at a statewide study of increasing the weight limits for trucks on the interstate system. Right now it's 80,000 pounds. Opportunities to increase to 97,000 pounds. We've actually done some work to increase to 120,000 pounds on some of our bridges. So we'll be looking at those opportunities as well.
And let's the increased capacity in that regard isn't necessarily just about, you know, if truck weights are permitted to be higher, right? It's also about the roadway and the integrity of the roadway. Even if the truck limits stay the same, you know, you have, you know, the ability. Is that right?
If you want to address that one, I mean, it gives us the longevity of the road itself. You know, you're building a road that will stand
the stronger capacity.
Yeah. That's the approach we took with I-90, especially all the mainline bridges. We thought there was a good investment, and it didn't really come at that much of a premium cost. So we're getting extra life out of those structures, which we know is important because then we don't have to be out on the roadway disturbing traffic as frequently.
So Paul makes good. So really what we're doing as part of the master plan is applying all the lessons learned. We've learned a lot, not just of what we're doing on I-90, but what we've done on the Central Tri-State, what we've done on the Central Tri-State in the past, but then also the reconstruction widening that we did maybe 7-8 years ago on the South and North Tri-State too. So really taking a lot of those lessons learned and applying them along this this corridor. So it's really an opportunity for us to.
So can we just pause here for a second? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that we should be thinking about here? We've, you know, obviously transit is something that we've heard repeatedly. We need to be working with other transportation agencies. Anything else that we should be thinking about?
What's the proportion of passenger versus commercial on here? And do other are there other ways of thinking about distinguishing in terms of either construction or traffic management?
Between the commercial traffic and the passenger or commuter traffic?
So the split is about 80% passenger cars, and so that would be high teens in commercial vehicle percentage.
So slightly higher than maybe the some other parts of the system.
Yes. Percentage-wise, maybe it's not, but since we've got so much traffic out here,
right.
The percentage isn't necessarily
indicative. The actual number.
The
is
numbers. The numbers. Yeah, it's about 20 some odd thousand a day, which are trucks, which is some of the highest volumes that we have. Just by nature of what you have going on through there. So opportunities and things that we've looked at from the traffic management standpoint that we can.
So
look
I think
at.
So we should look at this, right? I think that's what she's.
Yeah, I'm just curious if anybody has said, if there's been a jurisdiction that said we can attract and keep commercial traffic, for example, if we do this in terms of the way we design and manage the traffic, if it makes any difference if you think about the mix of commercial versus
So I think it's something that I think we have done a little bit of thinking about, but we definitely will need to incorporate that as, you know, something to be taken away from the master plan process.
Anything else?
In other parts of the country, I see commuter lanes on the far left, 2+ passengers. Do we ever consider that idea, or has it been looked at or thought about?
It was something that was considered on the I-90 corridor, the high occupancy toll lanes or hot lanes. That was something that we did evaluate on the Interstate 90 corridor. Could be something that could be evaluated here as well. It's always a challenge because you have it where it's different. I don't know if you've seen it this way before. It's a toll within a toll, so it's always a challenge. How do you segregate the toll of these lanes versus the toll of the other lanes? So some of the things that we contemplated was camera technology and ingress and egress, but that's something that we could certainly consider.
At one time I'd read some studies too about, you know, how effective they were in actual, but we should definitely look at it for this corridor because it's a big commuter. Mm-hmm. A lot of commuter traffic here. So.
Any other thoughts, ideas? Cassandra, you have your hand up or you're just waving to me?
Just waving.
What's the impact of the Elgin O'Hare when it opens up on the on 294 in the corridor? What do you anticipate?
We anticipate some diversity. So that gives us some other opportunities to look at what the needs are. You know, again, what we want to do with this master plan, get out of here early enough and really optimize those investments and prioritize those investments. So we know there will be some diversion coming off of the tri-state, which is a good thing, up at that north end, just to kind of pull people and get them to and through O'Hare Airport. So it gives us opportunities to look at, you know, how much diversion do we expect and where will it go and how to get some. So there will be some splitting of traffic along the time. So we'll be looking at the schedule and the phasing of those projects. But there's definitely a major interface between the Central Tri and the Elgin O'Hare, big interchange at connecting 294. So that's, you know, gives us some opportunities to think optimally on investments along the corridor.
And the plan itself, it's a 2-year plan. Do you think of a 2-year cycle to have completed through implementation? 2020, 2022, 2 years?
That's what's in the move on my book right now.
Okay.
You know, I really, on I-90, we didn't have a lot of options because the road was falling apart, you know, as we were passing the program.
Right.
I really like that this 15-year program has given us this opportunity to do a little thoughtful planning ahead of time to figure out, you know, how best to make things work here. And we're learning, Kristen said it already, and Rocco said it, I mean, we're learning things about how we implement and what's the best way to implement from I-90. And I think we're going to apply those lessons learned here, and maybe we put out some work ahead of time on, you know, some of the bridges and get those out of the way. Maybe we look at employing active traffic management to keep our options open, you know, so that we can run you know, some of these commuter lanes in the future. I mean, this Central Tri is like really a great opportunity for us to pull together everything that we're learning and everything that we know now and try to do it in the best way
possible. And as Paul said, because we've got this time, you know, sometimes we don't have the benefit of time, but because we have this time, you know, taking this step seems like a useful one. So he and his team and Rocco have done a nice job of kind of pulling this.
So did you not like the 2-year implementation?
No, that was good.
So we get in and out.
If you could do it, I just wanted 2 years.
So it's actually three, right? 2020, 2021, 2022.
So one other thing, whether it's a pastoral myth as opposed to an urban myth, that this was designed to connect the forest preserves, is there anything that has been learned since the initial construction in the late 50s about ways of thinking about what we should be doing going past as much open space as this is? I know at least we've talked about 53 is coming, the people planning 53 are coming up with ways of thinking about drainage and other things, but and if we're going to really rip this whole thing out and start again, are there better ways of dealing with open space that goes along?
And the environmental impacts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So one of the major lessons learned, you know, you've heard the word bioswale. I think we really made that much more popular with the work that we did on the North Tri-State, with our work with the Cook County Forest Preserve. At that point in time, and it may still be, it was one of the largest stretches of bioswales in the entire nation. It was really the first time we were trying to create this a bioswale to treat water quality. So that's something, actually there's an item on the legal agenda today about the water quality measurements that we've been doing in these bioswales to protect and preserve some of those open spaces. We're very fortunate that this project is really contained within Cook County, because we do have a good relationship with Cook County and the Forest Preserve in particular. Because we've done a lot with them dating back to the bioswales. We've done some mitigation work with them. So there are a lot of things that we have learned together with the Forest Preserve about what's working, what types of plants. We're always evaluating the plants and, you know, the effectiveness of those plants themselves.
But maybe even, again, taking a step back. Absolutely. And some of the ideas around 53, if there's, you know, something additional.
And I know they're working here on their master plan, because they're celebrating something like the 150th anniversary of the Forest Preserves, and just be good to figure out how we can, as long as we're going to be spending money out there, how can we tie into what they're trying to do.
And I think, like Rocco said, phase one, or the master plan phase for the tollway, it has a huge environmental component to it, because that's where we usually try to figure out, you know, what it's going to take to make sure that we can get our permits and coordinate with the regulatory agencies. So there will be a lot of that included in this master plan phase.
Let's turn that on its head and be less about complying with regulation and more about contributing environmentally. I know you just
do
said
even
it
better.
That way. But
yeah. Absolutely. That's what I like to think about, right? Paul worries about when we get the permits. I'm worried about what it takes to get it and do it, which is good. But yeah, these are great opportunities for us to, again, apply a lot of that to what we have learned and make it better each time. So what we will be starting out is gathering some input. So there will be an overall outreach plan that we'll be preparing. It's really going to be tailored to this corridor. Again, it's very unique. This is one of the few corridors where we are starting at a tollway system and connecting to a tollway system at the other end, as opposed to many of the other projects that we work on where you're interfacing at the one end of it is with a different state or a different entity, so it is really contained with us. So it will be a tailored outreach plan. We'll be doing our stakeholder advisory work or other working groups, starting to pull those together, identifying who those partners may be. We've already started some of our work, as I noted before, with IDOT, with Cook County, and in relation to their long-range planning work with some of the interchange. We've talked to some of the local groups. We've also been coordinating with CMAP, because this is a major project and there are some major changes that are going to be that could be possibly coming out of this project. So we started some coordination with CMAP, looking at the freight aspects of what their plans are. They've done a lot of great work on the manufacturing and industrial drill downs to give us some insight into other opportunities. So we'll be starting our stakeholder outreach plan. We'll be actually developing a plan with our internal staff, and then we'll be bringing on some consultants to help effectuate the plan. But we'll also, as part of the typical outreach, like we've done with all of our other projects, we'll be having public meetings, open house events with communities, just to, you know, to garner some additional input and comments and, from both our community constituents, but also our customers on the roads. As always, we'll take these recommendations and incorporate them into the master planning process. One of the first things that we do on projects like this, we send out a letter to all the communities. I don't know how many communities that is just yet. But really trying to get some information from them early on. What are the issues or concerns? What projects do they have out there? What opportunities do they see where we can collaborate? So that's one of the first things we do with these. And as we move along with this project over the coming years, we'll be coordinating through the Customer Service and Strategic Planning Committee, providing updates of what's happening and some of the recommendations. So we do have some time on this. So some of the next steps, what we'll be doing, you'll see it shortly. This is all, this presentation was really to precursor to an upcoming advertisement for professional services for a master plan. Actually, there's two master plans along the Central Tri-State Corridor. We've broken into two segments. We'll also be putting out an item for the mile-long bridge and the Burlington Northern Bridge, since they are so critical for us. So we'll have four different professional service contracts that will be advertised shortly. And these will be initiated sometime in early 2015. We plan on completing the master plan and bridge design by the 2016-17 time frame. Again, we'll have the stakeholder community outreach along the way with your input and approval throughout that as we complete our master plan. We plan on advertising and awarding design contracts, as you see, in the 2017-18 time frame. This is nice because affords us some opportunities to really work on land acquisition, utility, and agreements, and all of our permit applications early on. So we are in a position where by 2020 or possibly sooner, we'll be able to hit the ground running from a construction standpoint. So as Paul was mentioning, there might be some advanced bridge and retaining wall work beginning in the 2020 time frame, possibly sooner. Really, that's what we'll have to look at, where we may need to do some work. And then, as we talk about the mainline construction, it could begin in 2021. So that's pretty much it. This is really, it's an exciting opportunity for us. It is a major project for us. So we're looking forward to exploring this more. Any other thoughts, questions?
Well, with the truck parking, are you going to look at additional parking outside of the Oasis areas, and are the Oasis is going to stay, or what do you anticipate there?
So from a truck parking perspective, we've talked about this with the Customer Service Strategic Planning Committee. We can look at opportunities at the Oasis themselves. We've looked at opportunities possibly at the toll plazas. There's some space within the plazas themselves for some opportunities through there. We're looking at all of our existing right-of-way throughout the corridor to see where could we possibly put some truck parking in ourselves. Maybe it's at the Oasis, maybe it's another right-of-way that we own. Also, there was some desire to look at some possible other private partnerships, or other partnerships, I should say, for truck parking. We've had some discussions with some of the communities along the way who are desirous of having some truck facilities along the corridor, because it's important through there. In terms of the Oasis, that's something that we're going to be looking at as part of the project. It is a constraint on the corridor. I would never say that we're going to remove them, but that's the reality of what we have. We've got we've done this before. Again, lessons learned. On the north end of the tri-state, we were able to do the a squeeze under the Oasis, and it worked. So, yeah. Any other questions? Thoughts? All right. Well, thank you very much.
That's all I have.
Okay. Let's move to finance. Has two items.
Okay. Thank you. Finance does have two items for the committee this morning. Second item will be spoke to earlier, the 2015 final budgets. The first item is renewal of the employee health benefit program. Prior to the 2010-2011 benefit year, we had issued an RFP and had sought competitive quotations for PPO administration services and HMO program. The successful proposal was from Blue Cross Blue Shield at that time. The that award provided for multiple renewals, actually up to nine renewals. This, our risk management group and benefits group have been working with procurement to seek renewal terms that we believe would be acceptable to the tollway. The proposal that they have offered and that we're recommending has renewal terms which allows us to continue to provide the program beginning on March 1, 2015 within the amount that we've budgeted for the year. The several important aspects of the program, the monthly claim administration fee that Blue Cross Blue Shield would charge would increase about 2.5% next year. The stop loss insurance, we do have a stop loss on a large claims, $350,000 that we've been carrying in this program. That would increase it from about $20 per month, member per month, or per employee per month, to $25.75 per month.
Have we had to use the stop loss?
We have not had to use the stop loss in the last couple of years, at least. None this year. No plans of that.
Okay.
The FSA fees, which is the flexible spending account plan that we offer to employees, the dental administration fees, they all stay the same from the prior year. The cost of the premiums for the HMO would increase 3.5% next year, so we believe that to be a favorable increase relative to the healthcare market. And we are proposing, in order to try to keep the cost of the PPO plan down and also to accommodate some changes within the Affordable Care Act, we're proposing that the out-of-pocket maximums for the PPO program be increased. The out-of-pocket maximums for individuals for in-network services would increase from $2,000 to $3,000. And the family maximum would go from $4,000 to $6,000 in network.
And we did take a look, right, at kind of the national averages and found that is, you know, we with those increases are kind of trending right at the national.
We are in that range that
average.
Others are making. The one aspect of this that does provide a little bit of relief, I suppose, to the employees with respect to that increase is that under the Affordable Care Act, all of the employee costs are included in that out-of-pocket maximum, including things that weren't included before, like prescription drug copays. So I think we believe that average is about $200 per month. So obviously it impacts different individuals differently. But one of the changes under the Affordable Care Act is that those prescription drug copays that previously were not in the out-of-pocket maximum are now included in the out-of-pocket maximum. As I mentioned, we believe we can accommodate this plan within what we budgeted for 2015. Also, one last item one last aspect of this item is there is a fee, a transitional reinsurance fee, that the tollway will be required to pay as an employer with a self-insured plan. That's estimated to, and that fee will is a federal tax or fee that we will pay outside of the Blue Cross Blue Shield program. We'll pay directly to the federal government. The first payment would be January 1, 2015, and we estimate that would be about $77,000. And so we would be asking for your approval to make that fee as required under the Affordable Care Act.
So that's the increase of the Affordable Care Act. The first time we're seeing this is the $77,000.
That's correct. And that's currently scheduled to be 3 years, that tax or fee is. And is actually scheduled to decrease in 16 and 17, I believe, as additional small employers are brought under the umbrella of the Affordable Care Act.
You said there was a 3.5% increase. What was the dollar amount? What did that translate to?
For the HMO?
For the whole HMOs, yeah.
Yep. Let's see that.
And we didn't go back out to market because we thought this was pretty favorable based on the conditions and like kind?
Yes. The HMO Illinois, if we just look at, let's say, the family coverage, the monthly premium is currently $1,548 per month, and that would increase to $1,609 per month.
Okay. And do we have an average cost to the employee, which includes the thresholds, the 2,000 to 3,000? Or don't you think about it that way?
No, we've tried to look at this, and previously it was difficult to get the aggregate cost because of items that were paid out of